The title of the talk this afternoon is Sky Maps. In some cultures, people really know the sky at different times of year, in different places, and it can be very useful guidance. For me, it's just, I love to look at the night sky, and someone gave me a map of the stars. And I was in the northwest of the United States trying to work out the map and the sky. It was the night before the first snow, so it was very crisp. And I just found Pegasus, which is a big rectangle with legs, flying horse. And this big moose came crashing through. I was just in the front yard of a friend's house, and I just hid behind their huge car. But it was funny to see Pegasus, this huge flying horse, and then the moose, which has these antlers like wings. But sometimes, having tried to memorize those names in the sky has sometimes gotten in my way of just being with the sky, like being uplifted by just the wonder of that much space. And yesterday morning, as I was still kind of asleep, this image came to my mind for this talk about how maps of stars can't just be one map, because it's different in different places and different times and different seasons, different time of day, different time of year, different position on the planet. And it depends also very much on actually what's on the horizon in that moment. If there's big mountains, we're not going to see Pegasus rising, even if Pegasus is rising. And the reason I finally got that map out in Montana, in the northwest of the states, is it's actually called, I didn't think of this before, it's actually called Big Sky Country. There are trees, but there's a lot of open sky. So with spiritual maps, maps of our spiritual progress, maps of our spirit, it can be important to take into account that one map may not be enough. And even a good map of where we are at that time, on that spot, on this planet, in that season of the spirit, even then it can really be misleading. We don't have to worry if the map is true or not true, but first of all, is it relevant? For example, is it relevant to me, is it important to me to know if Pegasus is rising behind the mountain? Sometimes, if there's a mountain in the way, it could be good to know Pegasus is rising. Something with wings is coming up, and I can't see it, but it's coming up. And other times we need to really look between the lines that someone traced on that view of the sky, between the dots. We might think that our way is about that, like, dot to dot, connect the dots drawing. Instead of about all of that vastness that's allowing the sparkling to sparkle. So many times I see us all, including myself, trying to see if we fit the map. And we try to see if we fit the map before we even bother to find out, did we even understand how to read this map? Before we even realize, what kind of territory are we mapping? And if we could feel ourselves, really like look at ourselves, just as a simple thing. And it's my feeling that it's not possible that we're just only that. That all of this is so amazing, there must be things that we don't see moving us along, moving us open and closed, growing us up. But many times we are willing to accept the taste of that pleasure of thinking, wow, I match the map. And we substitute that pleasure for any genuine feeling. There's a book I was reading recently in Lucknow we were exploring together, and they talked about it's a play on words in English. There's a saying that if we spare, I'll explain, it's difficult English. If we spare the rod, we spoil the child, which means if we don't use the stick, the rod, then we spoil the child. And they said in this teaching, using the rod, using the stick, spoils the child. The stick is the pressure we feel to fit the map, and it spoils us. We lose our natural openness to grow into what we cannot even recognize now as our birthright, as our potential. So one friend who's here told me something that I think is very common on retreat and off retreat, what we do with our lives. This person said, I keep wanting to come up with some kind of statement of what this retreat is going to be about. What is going to happen here? What am I going to fulfill? What problems am I going to solve? And I think it's that pressure that we accept. And that kind of sweetness of its kind, that substitute for real feeling, that we might match the map if we try really hard. That exactly keeps us from doing the natural, just dropping into what dissolves, what is already the dissolving ability in life to solve the problems. We go to the problems, those things on the map with lines between them. We memorize them. We surround ourselves with them. And we don't look up. What's not surrounding us? What helps the problem not be a problem, but something that's next to us in our experience that is an encouragement to look up, to lift the heart up above what we like to think of as real life. We think of it as real life because it's easy to hold on to. It's way too easy to hold on to. Our training is that the map is about the dots. So if it's stars, it's the dots. And I think what we're looking for, and also what we are, is actually, each of us, a map of the sky, not of the stars. We include all of those things, those stars. Each of us is a map of the sky. By feeling that that might be true, it could help us stay still long enough, just a fraction of a second, with joy, not because we have to, not because someone told me to, the fraction of a second where we can feel as if the map being energized or drawn. The map of what this life is about. I want to tell, it's just a funny story about us, so that we can laugh at ourselves when we take the map as more important than what we are. Some of you may know that I like to read about different research. And in this, in my particular sleep deprived and mommy hormone fuzzy brain, I might get some numbers wrong, but I'll try not to use any numbers at all. There was a group of people who were asked to come into a room. They knew they were participating in a study about taste, the taste sense. And they were asked to taste a yogurt. And the people who are running the study said, it will be easier to concentrate on the taste if we turn out the lights. And so they turned out the lights. And each person was given a cup of yogurt and a spoon. They were told, this is a new flavor of chocolate yogurt. And they were given time to enjoy the flavor and so that they could really comment on it. They could really take their time to taste in the dark. It reminds me a lot of retreat. We think that we're coming here to do one thing, and some other things are going on. So what the study was really about was not whether the chocolate flavor was sort of better than any other chocolate yogurt they'd ever had, or worse than, or whatever. It wasn't about better and worse. It was about that it was strawberry yogurt. And almost everyone thought it was chocolate yogurt in their own experience. Someone said, could you please tell me the brand? I want to buy it. I've never had such good chocolate yogurt in my life. And the majority rated it as a very good chocolate yogurt. So we might come on retreat and think, we've got to have a good retreat, or is this a good or a bad retreat, or is this a good or a bad meditation? And it's just so not about that. If we could fall into that kind of honesty, that can really question, like, this is a weird chocolate, actually. First of all, it's true I've never had a chocolate exactly like this. It really reminds me of something else. Somehow familiar, but not what I was expecting. Not what they told me it was. And if we can give space there of not being so sure, that we know what it's about because someone told us. Sometimes it can happen that we recognize strawberry. One important area I found for myself on retreat, and I think many people have mentioned this, I don't know if it's for everyone, but coming in to being in silence in a group of people. So we get to have time where there's a feeling of being in our own space or in our inner space. In some way, being alone in a group. And to a certain extent, in some way, we get some relief from hearing about, hopefully, at least we're not hearing about, I hope, other people's opinions, other people's judgments, other people's talking about the chocolate yogurt and where they can get more or whatever. But also in the silence, many times, something what gets revealed, one of the things that can get revealed, is how busy we might be using others as an excuse to judge ourselves or to judge anything, to keep an opinion going, to keep ourselves in that busy mind, busy place with the chocolate yogurt. And so in the silence, it can be really helpful to notice if I'm using you as an excuse to judge me or anything else. In the end, whatever we're judging, that kind of wall of judgment is in ourselves. So in the end, whatever we're judging, we might be using someone as an excuse to judge myself. So we're kind of keeping with an old map. And one thing that can be a clue that we're with an old map is there's not a lot of lightness. Where's the joy? In the sky at night, there's some of those bright spots that look like stars. They shine like stars. But they are not. They don't sparkle. They're planets reflecting light. And so reflected light doesn't sparkle. It's just a steady light. We can feel for the places in us where there's some kind of reflected light. We're using someone to judge. We're using what we think they think about us or what we think they think about that, to confirm or to keep us going with our chocolate yogurt, that's strawberry. And we could be interested in what gives the sparkle. Where is the sparkle? I would suggest it could be useful just to say within ourselves, even if we know it's not like an objectively true statement, but using the power of this, the words within ourselves, I won't use you for judgment. And if we're not using each other for judgment, it really falls down. We're living in a different world from what we thought. If we can feel through other people's filters, judgments, to that place where they don't want to use anyone for judgment, for going on about the chocolate yogurt. It's a friendly place, and it's much more easy to feel where the sparkle comes from. It's much easier to feel our simple being as a map, not of stars or anything. In a friendly place, it's easier to rest back and feel us each as sparkling children of the sky. Not here to orient ourselves according to things, much less between lines drawn between things from one perspective, which is this planet. From this planet, we see those three stars in a line as Orion's belt. From another planet, we would see something else. If we're not using other people as an excuse for motivation, does that make sense? If we're not using other people as an excuse to come to the meditation hall. So not because I should come. And also not coming because I think I should come. But it's not about should come or should not come. At a friendly place, we're allowed to play around with things like should come, should not come. From a friendly place, it's a play. We play with it. But we don't play lightly with ourselves in the sense of it doesn't matter. We can say it doesn't matter if that helps us play. But then every time we can bring the whole of us, which is not just what we think we are, to this place, wherever we are, in the hall or out of the hall. It's not about chocolate yogurt. That's important for us, and it's important for this world. When should is not motivating, I should, you should, we should, they should. And when we give up our job of judging, we realize that's not fitting us as an occupation anymore. We can start to notice some things. If I think I should come to the hall, and that's why I come, I am not here when I come. Once I'm here, I might be able to find myself back. And it might be helpful to be here. or not. If I think I should come to the hall and I don't, I'm also not there. So we're leaving ourselves without here and without there. But in any moment, here we are, the whole thing. I keep having this image of us as like the front part of a circle, a big circle, like maybe the front of a ship. And it just feels like, before I was saying resting back and dropping down into that honesty, but the same would be like resting back allows us to lift up this heart above the chocolate, strawberry, better, worse discussion. When we're worrying about, oh, there's only however many days left, and I have, so how many days are left?
Four.
My first retreats, I was counting not only the days, but the hours, so. y'all are better to check how many days are left. I don't know if you've noticed, the moments of counting the hours, I noticed, the moments of counting how many meditations are left, how many days are left, how many hours are left. We're trapped. We're trapped in the discussion. And when we could feel, what was it that I came here for? I mentioned earlier this teaching from the book about the stick spoiling the child. When we're holding the stick of how many more meditations do you have to go to before you get your diploma, we're spoiling ourselves. Spoiling means we're losing our life. We're training ourselves to go against our life. There's something in us that really wants to be open to what we don't yet know. It wants to learn how to integrate what we haven't integrated. But when we come with the stick, we're trying to hurry, to finish, to get it right. We're just sitting here looking at a map that may or may have nothing to do with us. If we can trust that wonder to be enough, whenever it happens to be at hand, it's enough. It's enough to help us step off the map. So we're making the map and we're breaking the map. Just stepping off. Sometimes we keep the map because we are looking for some kind of stable place to be able to look at what seems disordered in us. We can sense that there are things, as someone really beautifully said the other day, sensing some disorder in the mind. after difficult experiences. Experiences that anyone would agree were difficult. Disorder in the mind. We have to be careful of what kind of stability we accept. If we want a stable map, or if we want to really feel in ourselves what is trustworthy. In this life experience, as some kind of sacred circle, or a circle that includes the invisible. Then we step off the mat. Stepping, help comes. Holding onto the mat, we have the mat instead of the help. We have the expectations, we have the ideas. We have the substitute. I've often thought that, including before I became a mother, I've often thought that parenting and having children was a good metaphor for spiritual practice. And now I'm finding that it's a very good metaphor. I read recently in a book that Anandiji gave me, where there was a study of mothers. And mothers who had plenty of resources in a stable way. Mothers who had very few resources in a stable way. And mothers who sometimes had plenty and sometimes had little. And what was found was that, of course, the mothers who always had plenty showed the most nurturing behaviors. They were more physically in touch with their children, more quickly responding to the needs of their children. And you might guess, because otherwise it wouldn't be worth telling the story, that the second and nearly as good as the best mothers were those who had scarce but stable resources. They also showed almost exactly the same amount of so-called nurturing behaviors. We could say responding out of the blue, beyond what would seem to be humanly possible, for what is needed in the moment. Spiritual practice, spiritual life. Not because we should, not because someone said. But if we look at spiritual practice and try to feel what is stable resource, what is this, a stable, let's say, platform. And as we're observing our experience, I won't say as we're meditating, as we're sometimes able to catch ourselves what's happening in the body and in the mind. At first, what we notice is how unstable. So many things going on and then gone, like sounds. So much and then so little. Often on retreat in spiritual life, When someone has a lot going on, they'll say, ugh, how long can this go on? I can't take anymore. And then as soon as it quiets down, nothing's happening. If we can just feel, and it's a question of great importance, feel what is trustworthy. And it doesn't need to be a thing. What helps us live a way of being that doesn't cover over all of the love? That we are born to live. Like it or not. What can we see in ourselves as an image of sparkling life? That may not be a thing. That may not even take things as things. That gives us, in the Buddhist language, wholesome energy. So the Buddha spoke in this very clear kind of statement that if we can notice what we do is wholesome, if it brings more wholesomeness, wholesome is like good, not rotten, nourishing, nurturing. And sometimes in the Buddhist language, I find that it comes out so dry that we can miss the point. What is meant by wholesome, and what is it that can be wholesome and bring out more wholesomeness? That's taking us beyond the map that we have. Beyond the lines. So we're inventing our way, we could say, as we go along. It's a surprise to us. Our way, our true way, is a surprise. And one kind of encouragement to step off the map is when we feel an inner attitude towards life, towards ourselves, towards anything, an inner space or inner attitude that, let's say, just lifts our foot and directs it off the map. It helps us go out of our way. So in English, we say, I would go out of my way for you. Doesn't mean I'm leaving my way. It means I'm going beyond what I thought I could do. I'm being cracked open. And losing nothing. Not only that, more wholesomeness, more healing, more momentum towards clarity and honesty, and joy for no reason. That's what we could say is wholesome. What helps us without trying, without because we should. To feel that we're in a friendly place, even when we feel that something is in our way, blocking. What is the inner attitude that's wholesome, that is happy to find something that seems to be in the way? Because there's a recognition that this is part of the way. And it's not on the map. So the map tells us it's in our way, blocking. Something else comes up and says, this is your way. What helps us get out of our own way? Get out of the way so that our way can happen. Not trying to force ourselves to like balance on that little line between the stars. A line that doesn't exist. There's a way of being that allows, it seems as if, clear, warm, honest, friendly energy, as if coming out of nowhere. And from living that, letting that direct our ship off the map, letting that lift up the heart. It brings about much more than we could imagine of even more energy for serving life, and even more willingness to be the front end of that circle. In direct contact, heart and the unknown. Are there any questions at all? You, what we see of ourselves, all of us, including what we don't see. In the whole circle, there can't be any they, them. Also. Any other questions? Sounds like the time is up. Thank you very much for listening.